Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, March 7th. I'm Ray Graff. Today's program is all about birds, and in the studio is none other than the one, the only, Rich Guthrie. He is here to answer all of your questions about birds. The number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You may also email the program, voxpop@wamc.org is the email address, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 1-800-348-2551. If you have a question about birds for Rich Guthrie, who made it through this terrible weather on this, well, it's not terrible yet, but it might get terrible.
Oh, it's terrible. Just
terrible?
Read it online.
Well, he's here, folks, so let's give him a gold star and give him a call. Vox Pop begins after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We'll be discussing birds on the show today, and our resident avian expert, Rich Guthrie, is here to answer your questions. Rich is retired from the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. He is a board member of the State Ornithological Association and the regional reviewer for the premium birding site eBird. Our number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you may email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Again, the number is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Nice to be here.
You were not on the air with us last month.
No, we skipped a month.
What happened?
I was away.
Where'd you go?
The other hemisphere. On the other side, down on the bottom. Cape Town, South Africa, and thereabouts.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what did you do there?
It was terrific. First of all, went up into the big game area of Kruger National Park, with elephants and hippopotamuses and lions and leopards and cheetahs, all of that.
Amazing.
And then, really, the highlight for me was taking a boat out into the South Atlantic out of Cape Town, watching all those albatrosses and storm petrels and seabirds all around us. Even though we went out into a dense fog, you could hardly see in front of you. But then as soon as it cleared, the birds were all around us.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Oh, I tell you, I love the sea and the seabirds and getting out there. And we saw lots of good, you know, eagles and hawks and secretary birds and ostriches with their babies. And
what's a secretary bird?
A secretary bird is a predator bird. It runs on the ground like a fast-moving, high-speed.
Is that on the cover of the
book?
It's
like Beep Beep the Roadrunner in steroids.
Wow.
And it's got these little quills on top of the head that look like feather pens.
And what will a secretary bird eat?
Snakes, lizards. They run them down.
Wow. And
they're huge.
Do they take dictation?
No.
No.
They give.
Our number is 800-348-2551. Rich, before we get going with the calls, let's do a couple of emails that came in prior to the show. This one is from Ethan in Lakeville. Birds in the snow. When the birds are much more active around the feeders when it's snowing, and to some, like myself, kind of seem to be acting jubilated, is it really an increased sense of food urgency that's kicking in?
Yep.
Really?
Yep. They got it. They know what to look out for, and they're storing up right now. And so, yeah, it is an urgency that draws them in. And I like to bring on that now, since we are having this snow event out there, to one extent or another.
Yeah, it'll get worse.
It'll get worse. And the birds are just flocking into the feeders, at least at my house. And I suspect that anybody else who's got an active feeder, all sorts of things are coming in. The goldfinches, dozens of them. All of a sudden, I hadn't seen one or two maybe through the winter. Now they're there. And the blue jays and the grackles and the red-winged blackbirds. So and the plus side of that, if that's not enough, we got more. The rare birds see all this action, and they may have been skulking down in the hedgerow down at the edge of the field, and all of a sudden they're saying, I want a piece of this.
What kind of rare birds?
Well, there's a whole range of possibilities. You know, we talked about the green-tailed towhee last time I was here back, it might have been January or whatever, and the green-tailed towhee, they're sort of almost a mythical bird, but it is real.
Mm-hmm.
Well, sure enough, as soon as I'm on the other side of the world, one shows up in New York at a feeder. I'm away, and there it is.
Oh, well.
So, But the key is there's still one out there right around the area.
Well, that's
great.
And it's
at somebody's feeder today, maybe.
Oh, that's cool. So this one came in from Joe in Eagle Mills. Two questions. One, about a year back, I saw a white-throated sparrow in our yard. In the year since, I haven't seen any. How common are they? We live just outside of Troy.
Well, the white-throated sparrow, most of them are south of us, all the way down to Florida. There were a few at my feeder this morning.
Oh,
they,
really?
They joined the goldfinches and the song sparrow and the others. They're out there. They're fairly common. The one to watch out for with the white-throated sparrow is the white-crowned sparrow.
Hmm.
And better yet, the golden-crowned sparrow. Now, there's the brass ring of the rare birds.
So that's a rare one.
Yes.
The second question from Joe in Eagle Mills. A week or so back, I saw a little guy about the size and shape of a bluebird. It was white on the belly and reddish kind of claret color on the breast, the head, and onto the back. Wings were dark gray. What was this?
Yikes. Hmm.
Well, you want to hear the description again?
Yeah, run through that again.
White
on the belly.
Reddish sort of claret color on the breast, the head, and onto the back.
Mm-hmm.
Wings were dark gray.
Well, I'm going to forgive the wings part and say that may be a fact, an aspect of lighting. And I'm going to go with Carolina Wren.
Okay.
For the moment, let's see what we got.
Now, if you're watching at WAMC.org, Rich is now consulting the National Geographic Field Guide to the Birds of North America, and he'll hold the picture up to the camera, which you won't be able to see because the picture is frankly not that great. But give it a shot anyway. WAMC.org. And
there
here it is, the Carolina Wren.
The Carolina Wren.
I can barely see it. Oh, look at that. Oh, yeah. Okay.
So far, so good.
Yeah, but the wings are brown.
The wings are brown.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're just going to do a little artistic license and give it gray wings for the moment.
All right. Well, Joe in Eagle Mills is a well-known volunteer around here, and I will get more details when I see him next.
I want to see all about him. Get a picture. And if it's a green-tailed toe, you get two pictures.
And your email address if people want to send you pictures of birds, Rich?
Coming up. RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com.
What happened there?
I'm just slurping a cup.
All right. Let's go to the phones and stop slurping. Here we go. We'll go to line one. Andy and Thurmond. Andy, you're on.
Hi. I love your show, Ray. And Rich, you're the best.
Thank you.
And so I moved up into the Adirondacks. I live in Thurmond, which is about 22 miles northwest of Lake George.
Mm-hmm.
In 1975, and I lived in a little cabin, and I used to set out at night, you know, around sundown and listen to the whippoorwills.
Mm-hmm.
And there was lots of them. Well, I haven't heard a whippoorwill in like 20 years. And I moved to another location. I didn't take down a bunch of trees, just enough to get my place in. I know they're a ground nesting bird, and I'm wondering if they're endangered, or if there's anything I can do to encourage their propagation, because I loved hearing them.
Yeah, I do too. Don't despair. The whippoorwills are kind of finicky and a little unpredictable in their comings and goings. They may be in an area for many years and then suddenly disappear and show up in another area. There are a few reliable spots that I know of for whippoorwills in the Adirondack Lake George area. And one of them I highly recommend, and you're welcome to go there in the summer months to West Mountain ski area.
Right.
The base of West Mountain has a nice assortment of whippoorwills and even chuckwill's widow, the big southern cousin of the whippoorwill, which is really rather unprecedented in our area. And also Tongue Mountain, as far as I know, has a viable population of whippoorwills. And I suspect that they're elsewhere up there. Just haven't heard about them yet. But
is there anything I can do to attract them?
I don't think so.
Really?
Yeah. They're more or less in charge of their own destiny, and will pick and choose where they like it best. Also, in the Malta area, I know the Malta Woods has a whippoorwill population and has had for many years. And there, as you may know, has undergone a great deal of change and development. And yet the whippoorwills persevered.
Oh, all right. Well, Andy, thank you for the call. You mentioned that they are fickle in where they choose to live. What would make them leave Andy's neighborhood?
I don't know. I don't know. There are the whippoorwill group, the nighthawks and whippoorwills, have been having a bit of a problem with because they're nighttime insect eating aerial insects, the big moths.
Yeah,
that's their food. And the factors that are affecting the food may be affecting
so light and things like that.
Light and pesticides and other predators, and especially the so-called common nighthawk. They virtually disappeared from our area.
Interesting. Let's go to Eric and Troy. Eric, you're on.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Okay.
I was just curious. I've always kind of been curious. It seems like there's always a ton of crows over the city of Troy, and I just didn't know if the expert had any, you know, reason as to why that might be.
Well, the crows, it's a winter congregation of crows. The crows are very gregarious in the wintertime. They gather in these huge flocks, and they've had taken a liking to urban areas over the last few decades. Not only Troy, but also Albany area, and I know down in Poughkeepsie and over in Massachusetts, some of the urban areas of Massachusetts have their clusters of crows that come in to roost as a group. They fan out in the daytime and go into the all points of the compass, visiting various cornfields and other places looking for chow.
Sure.
But then they show up every night back again. But that ought to end soon. Crows are going to be taken off and heading up to up north where they'll be nesting, pairing off and nesting. And all of that buddy system takes a time out because they become territorial and they don't want any company in their nest area.
All right, Eric, thanks a lot for the call. We have to take a quick break here. Rich Guthrie is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551. Back with more Rich Guthrie after this.
Support for WMC comes from Interactive Media Consulting, a team of online market strategists providing websites, branding, and digital marketing to the Capital Region and beyond since 1996. iMediaConsult.com. Nine Pin Cider, Albany. Hard cider made from local apples. Tasting room features New York cider, beer, wine, spirits. Open Tuesday through Sunday. Now available in Massachusetts and Connecticut. NinePinCider.com. Capital CarShare, a car sharing network offering a fleet of eco-friendly vehicles for neighborhood transportation. 24-hour reservations available online. CapitalCarShare.org for donations and information. Saratoga Chamber Players, presenting a program of Haydn trios with Jill Levy on violin, Judith Serkin cello, and Jeanette Kutcook piano. Saturday, March 31st, 3 p.m. at the Hyde Collection in Glens Falls. SaratogaChamberPlayers.org. And Dr. Lucy Chapik, Latham, New York, a plastic surgeon dedicated to aesthetic cosmetic surgery, fat transfers, facial rejuvenation, breast augmentation, and laser and skin care since 1996. 518-786-1700.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is our guest. Richard P. Guthrie, if you're scoring at home. And Rich, before we get back to the phones, a couple of quick emails here. I know you have a brief list of things. We'll do that in the 40 break. This is from Edward. Just began putting out suet, which attracted red-breasted woodpeckers and downy woodpeckers. Is it possible to easily distinguish between downy and hairy woodpeckers?
Easily, no. But they look almost identical. The hairy woodpecker is significantly larger than a downy woodpecker, but if you don't have them side by side, it's easy to mix up the to not get a good
hairy
proper scale, the hairy and the downy. Two clues. The hairy has a long bill. The downy has a short bill.
Uh-huh.
And the clincher is if you look at the white tail feathers, the white outer tail feathers, the downy woodpecker has little black spots on the white outer tail feathers. The hairy woodpecker does not.
Okay. All right. Very good. You know, there was a very famous DJ, Harry Downey. I bet he got his radio name.
Yeah.
From putting the two woodpeckers together, right?
Well, there you go. There's one handle.
Or maybe not. This one is from Joel. Two questions. Let's try to keep it with one question, people, but we'll do both for Joel because he's a regular. Question one. On numerous occasions, we've watched reverse V formations of dozens of geese or ducks winging across the sky. Is the goose duck at the apex of the formation always the leader, or do those in the group periodically trade off?
They trade. And what it's all about is energy efficiency. they're riding the slipstream of the goose in front of them. Just like a bicycle in a marathon will do the same.
Okay.
So the leader has to do the hard lift, but then they switch off. And how they choose who's next is random.
All right. And this one is question two from Joel. Last year, as ice was receding from the lake, we noticed a formation or two coming in for a landing, heading into the wind, of course. Half landed on the water without incident, and the remainder landed on the ice. Why did those landing on the ice not slip, fall, or otherwise have mishap on the slippery surface?
Good brakes.
Yeah?
Well, I guess they're in good control of their landing. But there is a humorous video out there of a mallard duck landing on ice. And he came down that ice like a bowling ball.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just slammed into the other ones, yeah.
All right, and this one is from Mike in Hinsdale. We have a big group of starlings that live all along the eaves of our house. They recently returned. They just seem like nasty birds. They scare the other birds away from the feeders. And this past fall, they destroyed a mourning dove's nest along with the eggs inside. Is there a way to get rid of them and keep the other birds from coming back?
Well, starlings are they're kind of a mixed blessing. They're not a native bird species.
England?
From Europe.
Yeah.
People in England and Germany brought them over years ago. It was a dumb idea, but that was the vogue back in the Victorian era. Now they're here, and they're doing very, very well. They are the Bill Gates of the bird world.
Really?
Yeah, when it comes to success, they got it measured.
Huh.
Now, discouraging them, that's a tricky prospect. They're usually very aggressive when it comes to nest sites. This is why bluebirds were having such a hard time, because the starling was out competing them for the nest sites. Good people got the idea of putting a bluebird nest box up with a hole too small for the starling and just right for the bluebird, and that worked out very well. Now, as far as other aspects of it, it's a tough call.
Mm.
They're very skittish. The best you can do is go out there and shoo them and go away, bird.
Putting a fake owl up wouldn't help.
No,
they're fun, though, aren't they? They look nice.
Well, they do, and especially when the bird is perched on top of the head of the plastic owl.
What about a garden gnome up on the roof?
A garden what?
A garden gnome?
A gnome?
Yeah, what do you
think? Probably another nice perch.
That would
you
be
know
fun.
What could work, and I've seen this done, is a rubber snake.
Come on.
Oh, seriously.
Really?
Birds will take no chances when they see something like that. Because a snake is motionless, and they're just as happy if it were to catch a bird, and birds know that.
What a real snake up there.
Well, good luck with that.
All right, this is the time we go back to the phones, and Kathleen in Worthington. Kathleen, you're on.
Hi, I have got an answer for a caller from your last show.
Oh, I love
good,
this.
Right.
It was a woman, I think, from Connecticut, and she was asking you what possible bird could make a sound like a tree frog.
Like a
tree frog.
Oh, yeah.
Puzzled over that for a while, and I just couldn't call in right then, so mm-hmm. I'm calling now. It is the red-bellied woodpecker.
Yeah.
It sounds like a tree frog. I've had them around my house for years, always wondering what these tree frogs were doing so far up in the trees. And it was only last year, this is like after 25 years, that I had some in my yard.
Well, Kathleen.
And they were just above my head. It was a pair,
uh-huh.
and they were banging on a branch that was just above my head, sort of synchronized with each other, and they made this sound like a tree frog. I couldn't believe it. It's in my memory now forever.
Kathleen, thank you very much for bringing that. Yeah.
Okay.
That works for me. And
yeah.
if you're listening out there in Connecticut, check out for red-bellied woodpecker.
Right,
I hope so, yeah. Uh-huh. Well, I was just so excited I couldn't stand it that I finally solved the mystery.
Well, thank you.
And even in the colder weather, like I've heard them this past week, and that didn't make any sense if it was a tree frog.
Well,
you know, but
Kathleen,
that is their sound.
We want to take down your number because I'm going to call you again sometime and we get the mystery
that's
call.
That's nice. And you know what? The great thing about this call, Kathleen, is we get to hear Rich make the sound again. Do it one more time. Oh, I like that.
Well, they do it a little gruffer than that. They do it better than I do.
What? Kathleen, thanks for the call.
You want to take down my number?
No, not
over the air, Kathleen. Whoa.
No, right.
No, but okay. I tell you what, Kathleen. Rich's email is
Richard P. Guthrie.
Yeah, but I don't do emails. So
I love that, Kathleen. I love you for that. That's good. Don't give in to the modern stuff.
I'm not.
Stay tuned.
I have to use the computer at the library. I'm not doing it at home.
Well done. Well, thanks for the call. We appreciate it very
really
much.
Yeah, really good.
I like hearing that.
Mm-hmm.
I remember phone booths and full-service gas stations and all those good things.
Yeah, I miss what those happened? Phone booths. I can't change into my Superman outfit anymore.
Yeah. Okay, let's go back to the phones. And Tim in Steventown. Tim, you're on.
Hi, how are you doing? Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
The last week of February is when the woodcock showed up. It was quite warm, and it seems to get earlier every year that they show up.
Yeah.
They were doing their peating and and then their flight patterns. And I'm just curious as to what happens to them during this cold weather, snowy weather, because they like open ground. And, I mean, where's their winter range? Is it just south of here, and do they migrate back during this kind of weather, or are they in the woods?
Well, you know, the American woodcock, in fact, is a tenacious little bird. They're a sandpiper that have moved into the leaf litter of the woods, away from the sandy dunes. They do come back early, and when they do, they've faced with this kind of weather, unpredictable weather, year after year after year.
Yeah.
They do make it through. They hunker down. Some of them cluster together. Two or three or four of them will gather up and cuddle up together. And they just have to wait it out. The ground is mostly still soft underneath, so there's opportunity for food for them. They probe into the ground for earthworms.
Even at this time of year?
Well, they can, and they better be able to, because that's
the limit of their northern winter range. Is it just south of here?
Just south of here. We get occasional ones on our Christmas bird counts, but that's very unusual. And those ones, unfortunately, probably will not make it through the worst of the winter, through the January, February months. But the ones down in New Jersey or Delaware, they're anxious to get back up again, settle down to the business of reproducing, laying eggs, and raising young. They're an amazing bird, and I'm glad you mentioned about their calling and their dance. They have an aerial, acrobatic, aerial, beautiful dance. It's hard to see. You have to go out at dusk and listen for that little eep, eep, eep. They do that while they're on the ground, and then they fly up into the air, and they go through this tumble salt flight where they spin and tumble and loop-de-loop down with the wind whistling through their wings. It's producing this kind of like, it sounds like a spaceship landing.
And then what do the bird calls sound like?
When they back down on the ground. And if you drive around in a warm evening through the months of March and April into May, with your windows down, you can hear them through the countryside. And it's a great... It's one of the best sounds in nature. I love it.
Well, Tim, thank you for the call. Rich Guthrie is our guest.
You
that
got
sound
me
again?
Started.
Do
meep,
that.
Meep, meep, meep.
Okay,
yeah.
Very good.
And if you're really close to them, they have a little bump call first.
All right, let's hear that.
Boop, eep, boop, eep. You got to be really close. And you have to be stealthful to work up to them in the almost dark and listen for that.
You lead a fascinating life. You
hey,
really do.
You know, it's a lot of fun out there.
Let's go to Bob and Troy. Bob, you're on.
Hello, Rich.
Yeah.
Yeah. Listen, I read an article that a bobolink navigates celestially plus uses a magnetic field. How do they use a magnetic field?
It's all in the nose. They got, you know, that's one of the mysteries of nature. Birds, as well as some other critters like fish, salmon, are suspected of using geomagnetic fields for navigation. And how they do it is a good mystery. But you're right. They do. It has been shown through some very clever laboratory work and field studies that birds will use celestial navigation. They will use polarized light. They will use sound, such as the waves breaking along the shore. And most importantly is geomagnetic fields.
I'll be darned.
And they'll follow these through. And what's interesting is if they come across an anomaly where you have a bubble of mixed messages coming from the magnetic fields below, They have to work their way around that. And it's interesting. There's an anomaly just south of Albany that shows up on these maps, Agosian maps. And you can actually, if you watch, you can see the birds kind of make a left turn to get around it.
You're kidding me. So is it a stronger point or a weaker point of the magnetic field?
I don't know. I think it's a hollow in the magnetic induction.
I did not know that. All right, go ahead, Bob.
Yeah.
It changes in the mountains to the flatland. Is that how they distinguish the field?
Well, if you look at a map of magnetic fields, you'll see that they more or less follow patterns, the isobars, or I forget what the term is, to separate the different levels of magnetic Gaussian levels, but it forms pathways, and in their brain system they have the map that they inherited. These birds are doing this on their own. A lot of birds make these trips without any sort of guidance, parental guidance.
Amazing.
Or leadership. They do it solo. They get down to Argentina and back to Baffin Island all on their own. It's really, really fascinating. And one of the problems may be that man-induced interferences may be having an effect on some of the migration patterns. There's a field of study out there that's worth a look at.
Now, we've heard on various Vox Pop programs that the Earth's magnetic field will switch.
Yeah, right.
At
it's
some
moving.
Point. It will happen. It,
yeah,
it moves around all the time.
Yeah.
What happens at that point?
The birds are going to have to probably adjusting. This may be why we're having some strange phenomena going on with bird distribution.
Hmm.
One of the that and climate change and also habitat change as fields decrease.
Birds. They're weakening now at this time, but they say that's a precursor to the switch.
Oh, you mean a plus or minus?
The magnetic field is actually weakening to some extent.
Well, that will be millennia away. It happens how many tens of thousands?
Oh, many
of
times.
Years
it's
apart.
Not an extinction event. I'm just saying what will happen with the bird's navigation.
But the North Pole is moving. The magnetic pole is shifting over. It's moving out of the Greenland area and over into the Siberia side of the world. And that presumably happens slow enough that the birds are adapting, adjusting.
Interesting.
Or they're switching and they're making changes too.
Rich Guthrie is our guest. Let's go to Deborah. Where are you calling from, Deborah?
Athens.
Oh, well, nice to have you here.
I know Rich pretty well.
Oh, good.
Oh,
well,
hi.
You're on.
How are you?
Hello.
Hey, Rich, I was wondering, is there really such a thing as a hummingbird butterfly?
Yes. Well, it's a moth, but not a butterfly.
Hummingbird moth, yeah. They're hummingbird. Magnificent to see.
They are. And, you know, they're beautiful. It's called a sphinx moth. It's a tomato hornworm emerges out as one of the sphinx moths that looks like they fly and they feed like a hummingbird. And in the summertime, as Ray says, they're magnificent to see. They're wonderful little adaptations for the same sort of feeding patterns as the hummingbirds.
Yeah, they're not little. They're big moths.
Yeah, they can. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's the truth.
But how is it possible that such a hideous caterpillar produces such a nice flying thing?
Isn't nature wonderful?
Isn't nature wonderful? Deborah, thanks for the call.
Yeah, it is.
Appreciate it very much. Over to who's been waiting longest here? Looks like Alyssa in Dulgeville. Alyssa, you're on.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
I have seen a finch-type bird on our feeders that resembles a goldfinch, but it's definitely more drab and slightly greenish. I'm wondering if that's just the color of a goldfinch in the winter or if there is such a thing as like an olive finch.
Well, there is, but this is not it. I'm looking at that you have a goldfinch in the winter. We're gonna go with that horse in this race. But on the other hand, there are some other possibilities, and I urge you to expect the unexpected because that's what happens.
I wish you could see this, Alyssa. I can. I don't know what to make of it, but there's some pictures there that he's showing me.
Yeah.
Explain, Rich.
And the goldfinch, as the name implies, in the summertime is that brilliant sunlight golden color,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
A golden lemon yellow color. But in the winter, they're drab olive.
Oh, okay. So it's just a wintering...
Yeah, it's the winter plumage of the male. And the female, year-round, has that drab olive because she'd rather not be seen His job is to be seen.
Well, there you go. Well, thank you, Alyssa.
All right. Very good.
Appreciate the call. And we'll go over to David in Waterville. David, you're on.
Hi, guys. We have a pair of black vultures returning for the second time in a year, perched on a church.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know they come this far north.
Well, you're right about that, David. They didn't used to. And this is one of those changes that is going on out there. The black vulture just 10 years ago was unheard of in this area. Now they are here and very much here.
I'll be right back. Very right, Vinny. Thanks. Okay, yeah. There's two of them. I didn't know if there was something dead laying around that they were into, but yeah, there's something to look at.
Well, yeah, they're the second cousin to the turkey vulture that also 40 years ago would have been fairly unusual in this area. So the turkey vulture moved in, and then right on its heels, the even more southerly vulture, the black vulture, moved right in too. And if you just expand that curve, you can expect that there will be more and more of them.
You know, they're pretty relaxed birds. I remember driving through town a year or two ago. There are several of them sitting on the curb,
yeah,
just hanging out on the sidewalk.
Well, they're way more, what can you say, tenacious, aggressive than the turkey vulture. Turkey vultures are kind of spooky. They'll get out of your way in a big hurry. A black vulture, you sort of have to walk around.
Yeah, that's the thing. The cars were going by and people were going, they're just hanging out.
Well, they got an eye on the prize there, and that's probably a dead possum or a raccoon on the side of the road. They ain't giving it up.
I didn't see that, but I did see a pizza joint across the street.
Ah, well.
You think so?
Well, not a good endorsement, let me tell you.
Well, I didn't mention any names. Let's take a break here. 800-348-2551. Good point, Guthrie. 800-348-2551. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Dr. Schnuffy's, providing high-potency vitamin herbal tablets for flu season colds, formulated by a local doctor, with natural immune-boosting ingredients available at health stores across the WAMC listening area, getwellformulas.com. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond, skidmore.edu/tang. Chester Common Table, Main Street, Chester, Massachusetts. Locally sourced comfort food, beers, wines, and cocktails. Live music every Friday, chestercommontable.com. George Propane, Goshen, Massachusetts. Family owned and operated for over 75 years, serving Western Massachusetts with propane and full-service heating and plumbing installation, services, and deliveries. georgepropane.com. And the Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York. Protecting the land that protects the lake, offering more than 32 miles of trails for hiking, birding, and outdoor exploration. HikeLakeGeorge.org.
Yeah, Les Brown and his band of renown. Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow here on Vox Pop. And Rich Guthrie is our guest. And we talk birds every so often. Rich, you have a brief list of things that are going on.
I do. Here we are in March, ready for spring. Get out there, get ready. But if you're in the Albany Capital District area, the Waterman Bird Club down by Poughkeepsie, New York,
mm-hmm,
is having a Wednesday field trip on the 14th of March to the Cary Institute of Ecosystem Studies.
Got
to get it right.
Yeah.
On the 20th, they're going to talking about the woodcock, the timberdoodle. They're going to be doing an evening walk at the Institute of Ecosystem Studies in Millbrook area. That's on March 20th at 7 in the evening. Check out the Waterman Bird Club website and get the details. And they want you to call first.
Okay.
Give them a call.
What's the number?
I won't give it. Their number is on the website.
Ah. Well, you're so good.
Well, don't want to make confusions. You get a digit wrong and some poor sucker is going to get a phone call in the middle of the night.
Cookie,
we don't want that.
Okay.
Yeah, but on the website. Also on the website, the Mearns Bird Club down in the Rockland, Orange County, New York. On March 10th, they're going to be going to the Black Dirt Region. Good birds in the black dirt.
Oh, yeah.
Also, on the 17th, they're going to go to the Bashakill. St. Patrick's Day, they're going to be at the Bashakill Wildlife Refuge. And both of those, again, check with the Mearns, M-E-A-R-N's, birdclub.org for their information. And down in Westchester area, Bedford Audubon is having on the 15th Maple Avenue field trip, Maple in Katona, New York.
Oh, yeah.
And then they are going to the Black Dirt region also on the 17th. And on the 24th to the Hunt Parker Sanctuary. Again, bedfordaudubon.org.
There you go.
And lots to do, people to meet, and birds to find.
The only time I ever saw a blue heron was in Bedford, New York.
They're
right
there.
On a pond. It was beautiful.
Yeah. They're here, too. Give them another month. They'll be all over the place up here.
I don't get to too many ponds anymore.
Well, all right.
But this came in via email from Frank. Going to Costa Rica next week on a birding trip. Any tips or words of wisdom?
Wow. Enjoy.
I could have said that.
Well, I can say that because he asked. And all I can say is you're going to be overwhelmed. Beauty abounds in Costa Rica, Central America. And that's where our songbirds go for the winter. So you're going to see a lot of familiar friends down there, such as the black-throated blue warbler, the American red start. And you're also going to learn about shade-grown coffee. Mm. And pay attention to that because the forest preserves down there, shade-grown coffee plantations, are very important overwintering areas for our native birds.
Now, you say he will see birds that are familiar. They haven't started their trek north yet?
Probably not yet. They wait till the last minute, and then they hustle right up.
Now, how long would it take the average bird to get from Costa Rica to Albany?
The males are in a big hurry. I would say it would take them 3 weeks to a month.
That's not bad.
No. And they're hot-footing to get here first.
Right.
And the females, well, not far behind, but it's the guys that got to get up here and stake out that territory.
This one is from Teresa, wondering about the owls. More owl talk lately. I live in northern escarpment of Catskills, wondering if it's chick time.
Yes, it is. The great horned owl is actually sitting on eggs if the eggs haven't even hatched out yet. It'll be another week or so before the eggs start to hatch out.
All right, this one is from Greg. I was driving out by Spencertown toward the Massachusetts border. I noticed some large ravens circling in a field, and I stopped and saw a deer carcass in the field with a large brown and white bird. It looked and flew much like a bald eagle. My question is if that was an immature bald eagle or was it a golden eagle? Do golden eagles migrate or ever visit our area?
Yes, to both. And the likelihood is that it was a bald eagle, being as you were seeing the white on it. And both bald eagles and golden eagles and ravens will feast on a carcass. They're scavengers when the opportunity is there. And in fact, if you know where there's a deer carcass out in the field someplace, keep an eye on it because it's attractive to all sorts of scavenging, not only birds, but animals, coyotes, foxes.
All right. So presumably you wouldn't want that right in your backyard.
Oh, if you want golden eagles in your yard, try it.
Well, you don't want coyotes in your backyard, do you?
Well, why not?
All right, fair enough. This one is from Joyce, who writes, about a month ago, just prior to the warmer weather, this year's new bird was a black-backed three-toed woodpecker at my suet feeder here in Housatonic, Massachusetts.
Whoa.
Winter storms or colder weather has driven it out of its more northerly range. Have you or listeners seen the black-backed three-toed woodpecker?
Yes, yeah, sure. And very unusual outside of its northern range. The White Mountains, the Presidential Range, the Adirondack Mountains, and up through Quebec into Canada.
Mm-hmm.
However, they stay put for the most part. Occasionally, one will come south, and I've seen them as far south as Barrytown, New York, down in the Hudson River Valley.
Mm-hmm.
That was years ago, and they... The Helderberg Mountains of near Albany, New York. But that's very rare, very few and far between. Get pictures, and I hope that you can put it on eBird.org.
eBird.org.
So that we can document at Cornell University's repository for this sort of information.
How many toes does a woodpecker usually have?
Woodpeckers have four toes.
Really?
Yeah.
But this one has three?
Three-toed woodpeckers have three toes. There are two different kinds.
This is very interesting.
Oh, it is. What an adaptation. Why they would have lost one toe?
Yeah.
Don't know.
Very interesting. Rich Guthrie is our guest. The things you learn on this program. Our number is 800-348-2551. Jim in North Pownell, Vermont. Jim, you're on.
As always, an excellent, excellent show.
Well, thank you.
Wow, are you tuned to the right station?
Wait a minute.
Go ahead.
When I first called in, I had one thing that I wanted to discuss, but one of the greatest things that I ever did in my life was taking my daughter out in the backfield and watching the Timberdoodles do their dance in the evenings.
I highly recommend that. In fact, you know what? I'm going to invite, next time on, we're going to have a listener get-together.
Oh, no.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah. And, here and, at the studio.
And, wrong!
And I was talking to a Phoebe the other day.
Oh.
I know it's really early for Phoebes to be around here, but I was actually whistling back and forth to her or him or whatever.
And they'll do that? They'll respond?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I talk back and forth to
him. You see what you did, Jim? Now you have him making bird calls, and that's really what...
We got to back up a little bit there. Are you sure it was a Phoebe? Yeah. That's closer to Phoebe than what I was thinking.
Okay.
Phoebes do say their name. They sort of sneeze their name.
Yeah.
Phoebe. Phoebe.
And I've got an answer to Ray for blue herons.
Yeah.
If he ever wants to see one, he should drive over to North Pownell because they crap all over my cars all the time.
Well, Jim, thank you for bringing that to the table, my friend, and have a good one. And
you're sending Ray out to the right direction.
Well done, old boy. Good old Jim. He always brings something to the table. We'll go to Jerry and Fonda. Jerry, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I switched from birdseed to exclusively putting suet out a couple years ago because I was attracting as many mice to my feeder.
Okay.
As I was birds. Now, is there any strategy or any way that I can keep the mice population down other than buying a couple of cats?
Well, don't buy the cats. No, it is, you know, there's going to be spillage. Mice and little critters will find it. I recommend putting an owl nest box out in your backyard. See if you can try that.
Mm-hmm.
And
the owls will take care of it?
Oh, they'll clean them up in a big hurry.
Okay. All right.
And you can find a design for a nest box for a screech owl on any of the websites. It's the same design as a wood duck nest box, and it works wonders. If you have, and it's all about the food. If you have the food and enough room for them, they'll move right in.
Okay.
Okay. Can I ask one more question?
Sure, Jerry. Go ahead.
Range limit of the red-bellied woodpecker.
Northern range limit.
Well, that's another one of those southerners that has come north recently, and they're still marching up into Canada. They're now firmly established in the Lake Champlain area on the shores of New York and Vermont, and I suspect they're probably inching their way into southern Ontario and Quebec, Canada.
All right.
So, but it was not long ago that you wouldn't expect to find one north of New Jersey.
Okay.
So here we go.
They are a-changing.
Times they are.
Let's go to Mickey in Saratoga Springs. Mickey, you're on.
Hi, Rich. Hi, Rich. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
We had sent pictures to Rich Pileated that we have out in the backyard, like on a daily basis.
Oh, you
now.
Sent pictures to Rich. Okay, great.
We had one out there a minute ago.
Mm-hmm.
Huge one.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed the other day that we have robins come now and eating suet. I guess you know there isn't anything else out there that they could.
Well, good for you.
Get now, you know, to eat. Oh. Is it unusual, you know,
well,
for them to eat the suet?
It is. Robins at this time of year are more fond of things they find on the ground. Again, like the woodcock, they're going to find insects that might emerge early, that they'll probe around for. And more importantly, they'll be looking for berries that may be left over. And they're pretty hard to find this time of year. So they have their work cut out for them. But again, it's all about getting back and setting up a territory. It's very important to them.
Okay. Well,
right.
But
we do get lots of pileated. And, I mean, it's just off the deck, you know, about 10 or 12
feet. Well, that's unusual.
You know.
That's unusual.
Why is that unusual?
Well, because the pileated woodpecker is very shy.
Yeah.
But they're adapting very well. and hearing more and more instances where they are more approachable and will come in closer to where
I'll
people are. But for the most part, if they see you, they're going to hide behind the other side of the tree and get out of town as fast as they can.
Mickey, thank you for the call. Let's go over to Scott in Queensbury. Scott, you're on.
Hi, thanks. My wife and I drove cross-country in our car last October, the northern route, and then came back. And while we were out there, we saw this gorgeous bird with this huge long tail and beautiful markings, and looked it up and found it to be a magpie.
Magpie.
And I was just curious why the magpies aren't in the eastern part of the country.
Well, you know, that's a very good question. I've often wondered that myself. Because if you look around the northern hemisphere, magpies are found not only in North America but across Europe and Asia, and they in the European population they can be found in habitat that looks very similar to our northeastern North America. The only thing I could say is they just haven't discovered us yet, and when they do, I'm sure they'll inch their way over. But they've been very sedentary. They haven't expanded their range eastward, much that I know of. And you're right. They're a beautiful bird. They're one of my favorites. They're not well-liked in many parts of Europe because they're voracious birds. They will eat the eggs and young of other birds. They're a crow, a very dazzling, mocked crow.
Yeah. Will crows do that as well?
Oh, sure. Oh, sure. In fact, the fish crow, I've watched fish crows work as sort of like a tag team, where one fish crow will go in and distract pigeons on a railroad bridge. I was watching where the nest was, and the one crow would get in there and distract the parent birds and draw them away from the nest, and the other one would go into the rob the nest.
They're boy.
Very clever, but, you know, it's nature. That's how it works. And so I'm a big fan of magpies, despite their shortcomings.
All right. David in Cummington, you're on.
Oh, hi there. Hey, great show, as always.
Thank you.
I heard earlier a friend of mine told me that you had mentioned the Carolina wren.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a funny story. I have one living in my shop this winter.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a hole up in the eave of my shop, which I was going to fill this winter. But I didn't when I noticed this bird hopping around in my shop come about November. Didn't seem to be too afraid of me, and was cleaning out the insects that were flying around in my windows.
Yep.
Once I started up the wood stove. And the other interesting thing is I've heard this bird all summer, but didn't identify it until it moved into my shop. So the bird comes in and nests in my walls and sleeps there for the night and then leaves during the day and hunts and then comes back. So I'm just very curious about this. I've never had any bird even remotely do anything so strange.
Well, you're right about that. The Carolina wren, that's one of their attributes, is that they will frequently feed on spider eggs on the window, on the windowsill around the spider during the summer will build a web by the window that catches the moths and bugs that fly in, and the Carolina wren will come around in the daytime and clean up any leftovers, including the spider. and they are known to come in. They nest in hollows. They will they come into my screen porch and go out through a hole in the top, and that's what they do. They're remarkable little guys, and they have a wonderful song. A very delightful song, and they'll sing it year-round. And it goes something like, tee-kettle, 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 tee-kettle. And what a wake-up call that is.
Well, thank you.
Oh, yes, I hear it outside of my window in the mornings. But now, will this bird stay around? This bird, I've never had one here on the property in 25 years.
Well, it's another one of these southern birds that has moved north. And, yes, they will stay around year-round, and hopefully – with luck, they will produce more, and you'll have a nice enclave of Carolina wrens in your neighborhood.
David, thank you very much for the call. Judy and Valacia, Judy, you have about 30 seconds.
Oh, okay, I'll be quick. Hi, Rich, it's Blue Plate Judy. Question about doves. I love my doves. They are all around the feeder, but they're not on the feeder. They're on the ground because a year ago I replaced my feeder with a squirrel-proof feeder, and it doesn't have perches. Mm-hmm. So my and I finally wanted so much for my doves to come up onto the feeder that I put perches on it the other day, and they're still not coming. So how do you get the doves to come back to the feeder?
Well, the dove is basically a ground feeder to begin with, and if they will need a platform up near the feeder so that they can walk around and feed. That's basic. They don't perch very well.
Oh, so it's not the perch, it's the platform. Oh, right. You are so smart. Well, my God. Well, of course, because I used to be two or three huddling on the old feeder together.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Judy, we're out of time.
So I need to put a platform, and that, of course, will bring back the squirrel. Okay, it's a quandary, right?
Gotta love the dove.
Well,
though.
We'll pick it up on the next show. Judy, thanks a lot for the call. Rich Guthrie, thank you, sir.
My pleasure.
Support comes from the Discovery Center, presenting March programs featuring Pine Bush Trivia Night and exploration into the world of winter, nature journaling, albanypinebush.org. Travels with Sarah, organizing private African safaris with authentic tented camps and lodges, accompanied by Africa specialist Sarah Kearns, Sarah's signature safaris.com. The Arkell Museum at Canajoharie opening March 10th with two exhibits from the museum's permanent collection, Capturing the Essence and Fine Art Animals. Information at arkellmuseum.org. And the Department of the Theater Arts at SUNY New Paltz presenting Water by the Spoonful, a returning Iraq soldier struggles with civilian life through March 11th, newpaltz.edu/theater. Thanks again to Rich Guthrie for being with us today. Thank you for some great calls today. If you didn't call, thank you anyway for listening. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Your phones are answered by Colleen O'Connell. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Now, you know, the weather is bad in spots, so if you're driving, take it easy. Tomorrow on the program, Ian Cowan will be in the studio to help solve your plumbing issues. Right now, stand by for news.